Welcome to episode 10 of the Judgmental Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Galea, and I'm here with George, all the way from Holland. Welcome, George.
Yes, episode 10, double digits.
I know, yes. It's been kick-ass so far. We had a week off, didn't we, George? Because we had hectic
that
schedules.
That is correct. Mm. Yes, family traveling schedules, and, you know, there is one thing you don't do in a German family, and that's miss a grandfather's birthday.
Oh yeah, that sounds important,
especially when it's one of those round numbers. Germans love their maths and they love round numbers because it's all neat and tidy, so you gotta show up.
Awesome.
And represent.
So we've had we're back again. It's actually Easter. This, we're recording this Easter Monday. We are streaming live on our Twitch channel, Play Judgment. So if people have any questions along the way, as normal, feel free to ask. Otherwise, this will be available in audio on all the usual places straight after the show or very shortly afterwards. Got a pretty cool show coming up today. We're going to do a quick update. I've got an update what's happening in production land again for Judgment. We're going to talk about the Vassal League quickly because we've got a tale of woe from the Dutch master. We'll talk about that.
Oh, jeez. Don't get me started.
And we've also got a bit of a treat. We're going to talk about the five things that make Judgment great. And also, we're going to go through the offensive artifacts, and we're going to play a game. We're going to have to talk about the one hero that is allowed to get the artifact that we would choose, and we can't choose a hero more than once across the whole offensive range. So that's going to be George and I, and we might go through the defensive ones next time or today if we have time. Lord Tyrith's watching on the Twitch, and he's playing you tomorrow, George, in the the league.
Right.
Yep.
Yes, it's going to be the deciding match because I have to. I don't want to give spoilers, but let's just say it's important that I win this one. It's vitally important that I win this one.
George can still qualify if he wins both his games, I believe. Is that right, George?
That is correct.
Yes, magnetic.
In the spirit of true comeback movies. You have to get all the way right down to the bottom of the league before you can pick yourself back up.
You're currently propping up the table in last place. You're beating the bye, but as I said, you've got two wins, and Battlecast is already, and the Constant Wave have both played all their games and are on three wins.
So
if you get your four wins,
should be able
to get in.
It depends on how the other guys play their remaining matches.
Yeah, Cheddar Caveman and Refugee, who are both pretty strong players. So who else you got besides Jeff, George? You've got Tyrith, and who else? Do you remember?
I have Refugee and
that's the game.
And Jeff.
So if you win both days, you'll make it, because that means you'll get past Refugee. I think you'll
Yes.
I think it's exactly. Fate is in your hands.
My game against Jeff and my game against Refugee, and if I'm really lucky, I can get enough souls for the tiebreaker in these last two games. And if I stop Jeff getting any souls by crushing his spirit so badly that he loses the next game after that as well, then I can even potentially kick him out of the playoffs.
Wow. On the other hand, George, have secured my playoff spot. I've played my seven games and have five wins. So pretty exciting.
Done. Congratulations.
Thank you. So I actually started practicing for the playoffs. I released the playoff rules today. We've got quarterfinals, semifinals, and finals. So should be pretty good. We're moving to 5v5, all on the new Scorched Earth 5v5 map.
That map is something else.
Oh, it's fun. And the final is a 30-hero draft. So... But the semi-finals and finals are both 5v5 pick and ban, so you bring seven heroes. So that's the format. Speaking of the Scorched Earth, George, I've got the neoprene prototype hitting my place tomorrow. It's in Sydney already. So if that's all going good, I'll put them up for pre-sales tomorrow. And we're running a special free shipping promotion to people pre-order. And we should have them within a couple of weeks at the latest if we put the order in straight away. So it's pretty exciting.
That's right. This is the perfect time for our American players to really get going. Yeah,
yes.
Jump on in and get the new mats and just go nuts on that 5v5.
Yes, it's going to be awesome. So that's going to happen. A lot of stuff going on. I'll do a quick update before we dive in, George. Besides that, we have got the Fazil sculpt being done. The horse is almost finished. I've seen it this morning. We've got the sculpt for... illustration for the new monster on the neoprene mat, the Scorched Earth. I can confirm
the unreleased unknown monster.
It's actually a demon. It's a demon with some really, really cool rules. And before people ask me, there is a version of the card that Victor can summon. So there's going to be a new demon that Victor can summon. And he also is a monster in the game. So there's two cards. When we release him, we're releasing two cards. The version that he's a neutral monster and the version that Victor can summon.
Okay, because if Victor can summon a neutral monster that hits as hard as the other neutral monsters, then it would be game over, man.
I can tell you that the version that Victor summons is stronger than Algorath in terms of hitting power, but it's also more expensive with more risk. So
sure,
it's right up Victor's alley. He loves this. He loves this stuff. So
yeah, man. If you want to play Victor, you got to have some stones, and you got to be able to put the game on the line, and I'm willing to bank on my ability to win this through this guy. So that's awesome.
So it's gonna be super cool. People have been asking about other demons for Victor, and then obviously down the line we'll bring out other warlock characters, so that's gonna be awesome as well. But anyway, yes, for now, so that's coming out, that illustration. We have got a very special project happening for Gen Con in the States. We're not gonna announce it yet, but that's in the works. Super pumped. So everything's going really good, really well. Jaeger, the production continues. He'll probably go up in pre-sales in about 3 weeks' time or 4 weeks' time, I think. Yeah, maybe 3 weeks. So, yeah, he's not that far away. So, we're super, super exciting times. We've got a big end of the year coming up, big second half of this year. So, pretty excited about that. All right, George, five things that make Judgment awesome. Do you want to kick it off?
Right. Yeah, so this is something that I kind of wrote partially for the blog, partially for the show. It's something that I think a lot of gamers will identify with, in that, like, you know, especially when you get to a situation where you do not have a lot of time to always play all the games that you would want, that you have to choose a game system that you kind of prioritize.
Yep.
And I decided to write down my thoughts on why I do this for Judgment, and why for me it's my top tier game, as in, given the opportunity, if I'm at a convention or something and I have 2 hours free time to play after an event or something, and someone asks me to play a series of games, I will pick Judgment as my number one pick. And yeah, we'll see what people think, we'll see what you think, obviously, and I'll go through them. All first right. of all, it's actually six reasons, but I grouped them into five and one. Five have to do with the game itself, and one has to do with the stuff that is not actually part of the game mechanics.
Okay.
So my five reasons why I love Judgment. So number one is complexity with simplicity. So I'm a bit of a nerd, right? And I'm really competitive. And one of the things that I enjoy about competitive tabletop games is their level of complexity that they can bring, because it requires a lot of knowledge. It requires a lot of skill to maneuver. And if you win a really complex game, it's actually an achievement, because it means you took time, you took energy, and you took effort to get there, right? Everyone can get lucky and win a dice game every once in a while, but it doesn't really necessarily always say something about the skill of a player. So I personally tend to appreciate skill, so I like to go for games that are complex. However, at the same time, you can't have a game that's so complex that only a 5-year veteran will have any hope of being able to compete remotely. And I think there's, you know, one game in particular, War Machine, that has that kind of drawback at the time, is because it's gotten so complex, it is almost impossible as a young player to genuinely be competitive, because you're just going to get caught out. Cool. Now, because new players are really important, because they provide energy, they provide momentum, they provide variety, they bring new ideas, new play styles, and all that stuff. And they make it fun, because it's boring to play the same people over and over and over and over again. You want always new players. It's really important that you are still attractive to young players, new players. And I think what Judgment does, it finds the perfect balance between complexity and having a really low model count to make sure there's a low barrier to entry and easy entry. All right, so there's several reasons for this. So one, not having any limits in your list selection. So first of all, it's super fun. It means that there's no faction politics bringing you down before you even start the game, play your first game, right? Mm-hmm. You have so much freedom that the 30 heroes that we have alone right now offer you millions of different combinations, which provide already like decades of replay value. Yeah. Just having 30 heroes and being able to pick completely freely, it allows for a moving metagame that will respond to common picks and common bans, and then, you know, it'll have this cyclical nature, and it's fantastic. Second of all, the I go you go. So the I go you go, what it does is, if you have alternating interaction activations, right, alternating activations, it exponentially increases the complexity whilst reducing the number of models that you need. Because every action that I take affects the boundary conditions that my opponent has for his next activation. And then when he activates, the table state will change again, forcing me to reevaluate my initial plan. And then I have to modify it. So most games that I have in this game, the plan that I have at the very beginning of the turn changes as the turn progresses, because my opponent keep doing stuff that interferes with my plan or changes the conditions.
It is a super cool feature. I think I would definitely want to highlight, because I get the idea when I played War Machine for ages of doing the master plan and, you know, working out your order of activations, and you pull off these amazing things, and I can see the appeal for that too. But the ever shifting melee, or the shifting battlefield, is such a good cool thing about the game. That you can, everything changes, like you said. You don't know where you're going to be, and you prey people with unpredictability all the time. Like, you don't know what they're going to do next, and most players do things differently, so always adds every game's so different for that reason. Magic the Gathering, or often with War Machine, you can do the same thing over and over again in the tournament, keep doing the trick, or, you know, the sequence that you get off and you do it. But with this,
because there's no one to stop you halfway during sequence.
That's right. Yeah. And in this one, you can't do that. Mm. Cool.
Exactly. So second reason why I love Judgment is no chaff. Right. So the worst thing about many other game systems is that they essentially force you to spend money, quite significant amount of money and time, to paint models that are trivially removed and easily, essentially disposable. Right. Yeah. You don't really care about them. And anyone who's ever had to paint 100 or more goblins or skaven or skeletons or zombies knows exactly what I mean.
Yeah.
So my time is precious. So is my money. So the fact that every individual model in this game is meaningful and important means that not only is the money that you and time that you do spend better spent, but it also makes you more engaged with the game, right? Every death is a loss, not just this apathetic removal of like 20 dudes in one go with a casual swipe of the hand.
Yeah, and I think that's, as a game designer, it also let us go crazy with making sure every hero is amazing sculpt wise we can pay attention to their rules. And we treat it that way as well. Like, the game from the ground up has that built into it, where every model counts, everything's important, even the detail on what you do for the monsters, because even that's cool too, right? Like, it's the monsters aren't chaff at all; they're a very important part of the game. So yeah, I agree, that's a good one as well.
Yeah. So the third reason I have to love Judgment is board control as a fundamental game mechanic. So for me, and I think a lot of people, this is probably their favorite element of the mechanics, is the fact that movement and board position is part of the dice that you roll for, that determine how the game goes. So having to balance the maneuver symbols, which buys you table space and control, versus the actual like raw damage of the damage symbols, basically means that every attack roll matters.
Yeah.
Right, because if you know exactly how much damage you're going to do, you can tailor it so that you can use the remaining symbols that you've rolled to gain extra table space for next turns. However, if you overextend your hand in that regard and you don't have the statistical certainty, then all of a sudden you may get the kill, but you won't have had enough symbols to, you know, go for the shrine. Mm-hmm. And then in some way you have to pay a penalty for making the choice to go for the raw damage route.
Yeah.
So that's really cool. And if you combine that with the pick three rule, that is what makes it hit a zenith, right? Because if you could roll and count an infinite number of dice, then there are certain heroes that would just never care because they would always get the best of both worlds. They would always get maximum damage and maximum pushes, and there would be no choices. But the fact that you have to only choose three dice means that no matter how much you stack the table, you won't be able to like one round, like one shot your opponent, right? The nightmare scenario that you have is if you're a damage player and you go to a control player, right? So anyone who plays like Magic the Gathering or War Machine or 140k knows how bad it feels to play against the denial deck or a denial caster, where they can control the table and you can't. The thing is that in this game, every hero gets to roll dice, and every hero can push someone. Every hero can control the board and participate and contribute to the overall win, which is great.
Yes, I think there's another thing as well. Like when we talked about designing it, we thought about a lot of these things with limiting the damage you can do, speeding up the combats without rolling damage probabilities all the time. And the three dice thing was a very important component of that. So yeah, it's cool. I think. I mean, like, there's lots of cool games and lots of cool mechanics out there, and I guess we have to settle on something, but it seems to work well for what we were aiming for with getting a sort of MOBA-style brawl on the tabletop, and, yeah, these are the kind of things that...
And getting the feel.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, that brings me, actually, getting the MOBA-style, whilst mentioning that, bringing that into my fourth point, is the fourth reason why I love Judgment is board interactivity. Yeah. So this is something that I think is completely unique compared to all of the other tabletop games out there, is that in this game, it is a huge part of the game is how you interact with the board itself. It's like a living table that you're playing on. It does stuff. It responds to how you move during the game. It applies pressure to you completely externally to what your opponent is doing. It has these very significant, like if you look at terrain, right? Because it's pre-made, right? Because it's pre-made, you can make unbalanced maps. You can make purposefully unbalanced maps that really tilt the game and that force you into a very specific set of obstacles. Like before you even reach your opponent, the question is, can you get across this lava pit and fight your way past those monsters before you can even start interacting with your opponent? Yeah. Like that itself means that, you know, especially in a tournament setting, you have to be ready for different kinds of maps. Like all of a sudden there's these challenges that you have to take into your list selection. So you have to be flexible and you have to be able to deal with a lot of different situations. And it's very cool because it really challenges you mentally. You have to maneuver around a lot of things.
So the people who've played MOBAs before and who played Judgment will know that in the MOBAs, that the terrain on the map is huge, right? The neutral monster camps, the Baron Nashor in League of Legends, and the dragons and things like that. So when we were trying to design the game, it was imperative that we got that right. I remember the first early play testing, a lot of the big War Machine players in Australia playing, like Loud Chris, you know, guy, those sort of guys, and they thought the monsters were a gimmick. And then they played the first few games and went, wow, these guys aren't a gimmick, they're actually really important. And I think we've strived from day one to make the monsters worthwhile. They're worth going for, they're worth killing, and if you ignore them, they're going to cause havoc to you at some stage, like a ticking time bomb. So, and the built-in AI and the monsters and stuff. So yeah, that's something that, and like you said, there's not many games, either if games have tried it, I don't think anyone's done it as well as it seems to work with Judgment. Which is great, and it's, I mean, we bring out monsters. I mean, I often thought for a while we'll struggle to sell the monster models, but people buy them. It's cool to have them. They're a very important part of the game, which is really good.
Absolutely, but it's not just the monsters, it's also the terrain.
Yeah.
I mean, pushing people in and out of terrain is a big deal in this game.
It is,
And shrines, you know, they not only do they act as terrain, but they have an impact. They can turn into a gun, or they can turn into a freaking
stone
golem that just smashes your face in. I would know, I've been on the receiving end. So, you know, it's it just adds another level of interactivity and cinematography that I really like.
And we're all, the culmination of this is the new neoprene mat. So when we did the first mat we did had no terrain on it. That was before I could convince everyone it was a good idea. But then we did three versus three maps that have terrain on them, and they're both really cool. And I guess the swamp map was our first foray into really trying to push the boundaries. But the Scorched Earth map, the 5e5 one that's coming out this week, is huge. It's got so many awesome elements in there, teleportation circles. The map's amazing. It's so much fun to play on. So yeah, I think we've really hit our stride in terms of map. Like, this map is immense. It's gonna be so much fun, and the interaction with the map is a lot in this one, which is good.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, playing terrain-specific warbands is like a legit thing.
It is. Well, people have had. I've seen people take the monster manipulating warband, which is very low damage output, but the monsters do all the damage. And
I mean, that's what I play.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, that's right.
That's my five. So yeah. My 3v3 team is monster manipulation.
Yeah, it's huge. We've got a quick hello to Commander Nightflyer, who's having a listen from the States. He works night shift over there, so he's watching us. So hello, well, thanks for joining.
Oh,
us.
Oh, brilliant.
Cool, George, is that number four? Is that four?
You got that was number four, yeah. Okay. So let's go right ahead into the last reason, number five. I call it statistical variance without excessive outliers. So this is especially for my War Machine peeps out there, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone knows how it feels, right? You are in a tournament and you have spent 2 hours making every single correct choice, making every single correct play. You've been performing hundreds of calculations per hour in your head. You've been anticipating your opponent's moves and reactions. You've perfectly positioned like 100 pieces in the right place at the right times. And then your opponent hup-dups up the table, rolls a double six, and you lose.
Yep.
And I know this because I've done it to people.
Yeah.
Right? And you know, you're left with a bitter taste in your mouth for the rest of the day, the rest of the week, the month, the rest of your month, and your whole like tournament can be ruined by this one experience, especially if that double six knocks you out of the tournament and you are like in the winning bracket.
Yeah.
Right? The problem is with that game is that your opponent hasn't learned anything, because even though he was losing, like even though he made a lot of mistakes, he still won the game. So mentally, because he rolled that double six, he was like, oh yeah, exactly. Like, he will justify it in his, he will rationalize it in his mind and say, yeah, I didn't do anything wrong. So they go away not learning anything. You didn't learn anything because you just played the perfect game of your life, right? You'd played better than you've ever done and you literally didn't make a single mistake. So the reason why I focus on that is because you have the pick three rule and the damage grid. And you, when you add those two together, the damage track or the damage grid, which is the, you know, the glancing solid critical damage rolling system, allows you to perfectly dose the damage so that you can use your skill as a player to stack dice to make sure that your percentage of doing a set amount of damage is as high as possible, right? So that rewards you for good play, because you can stack dice modifiers and help, you know, get knockdowns and all that stuff to help make sure that you have a 90, 95, 99% chance of doing that, you know, 12 damage you need to that guy.
Yep.
But it doesn't allow you to just waltz right out of a losing position and then just one-shot your opponent and win the game in one.
Yeah. So this is the thing I think was the catalyst for the game becoming a game. Was, so I've got a mathematics background. I've played all these games for years, like a lot of us have, George, and all these things, all these scenarios you're talking about, even things like Kings of War, there's a double six you can roll, you know, or a double one, whatever it is, and you don't break against any odds, and it can turn the game. And so there was sort of all these, the challenge was to get a probability system that rewarded good play, but didn't have those massive swings where it can actually decide the game. And I think that's what makes Judgment fairly unique, is the dice system, using symbols instead of adding dice together, which we did originally, and all these kind of things. Yeah, so that's and the other thing is, I keep saying the word negative play experience. I think we try to always remove the negative play experiences, which is having either heroes that are just oppressively annoying or oppressively, and not even just AP, sometimes they're just annoying. They're just horrible to play against. So we try to limit that as much as we can without stifling our creativity or variation. But we do that, and also that ability to get a rewarding game even if you don't win. And
exactly,
and to still learn when you're doing that, I think that's something we've done pretty well. I think that's how the moment seems to be in pretty good shape. So yeah, that's interesting. I know that's good. I agree. Obviously, I don't disagree with anything, I guess, but so far it sounds really good. Is that your five?
Yeah,
but you had a sixth.
That's my five. Yeah, I have a sixth one, and this one doesn't have anything to do with the mechanics. It's just the aesthetics of the game. It's like, you know, it's the models, you know, it's the big ass amazingly sculpted, amazingly designed models with the heroes that are just have, you know, just buckets full of character. You know, I mean, you have I think you kind of have some genre defining heroes.
Yep.
That okay. are actually quite new and unique. So I think, for instance, one of the reasons why Zonya is such a popular character is that I've been playing games now since 20 years or something, and I've played all of the fantasy games, but no one has ever done a female orc that has been like believable and also impressive and not like this kind of weird cartoony stereotype.
Yeah.
And I think Sonya is like the pretty much the best female orc warrior like archetype that I've seen in any game system or any intellectual IP so far. Cool. For instance.
Yep.
So I think that brings a lot of, and it's supported by the stats that you had for the Adepticon sales, right, that you were talking about last episode. So in the first year you sold like 70% of models to painters, and then in the second year it was all like the gamers. But the fact that like people who focus specifically on aesthetics seek out judgment in such high numbers so quickly says a lot about the about the value they see in it. I mean, Haxa still is like one of the coolest models, just one of the coolest heroes, like characters in a game. Like, he's just so cool.
We had a ton of excitement when we were doing the illustration for Haxa. I was trying to just push it. I think the inspiration for him was the Lion King, the monkey in the Lion King.
That sort of lopy,
skinny guy hanging off his pole. And I was like, I'd love Haxa. The sculpt and everything about him is pretty cool. The one I wanted to add to your list, George, at the moment, which is so true, is the community. The community of Judgment is fairly new, but it's so cool. It's so vibrant. We haven't really attracted I don't want to say it, you know, the unsavory elements of miniature gaming. We have like 100 people or so on a Discord channel, and everything's so vibrant and good, and I'm hoping it lasts like for a long time.
I think it will. I think it will. I think it's, I mean, obviously it's up to us to set a example.
Yeah.
To how we want to, to see the people who play this game to interact with each other.
Yeah.
So, I think that's important. But I think I think everyone who's like listens to the podcast and stuff has the kind of mentality where they enjoy talking about the game. They enjoy giving, like, inviting new people into the game, being inclusive, being open-minded, and having fun with it, and you know, experimenting. And that's one of the great things about the fact that the game is new, is it's kind of in that that lovely experimental phase where everyone is just free to just you know, there's no kind of firm political, like, it's because you got rid of the faction system, right? I think in any game system where you have factions, you tend to have this kind of in-out group dynamic.
Yeah. Yep, and it splits the community against each other. 100%.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think because Judgment is all, you know, it's all groovy, man. You can just hang out with anyone that you want, and it's good to meet people who have drastically different warbands than you, because you get to experience the whole pool together, and everything that you learn you can potentially use to your benefit later on.
That's right. And every hero is viewed subjectively, right? Or like everyone's like having got a tainted lens. So when a new Krix caster comes out, every non-Krix player is like looking at it going, okay, you know, like, but when you, with Judgment, when a hero comes out, no one's got a lens. Everyone's like, okay, I could play this, I could ban this, I could look at it like it's, you know, do I care about this? Like it's got, you might have a preference for races sometimes, but even that, I think over time, people, the game itself would erode that away. Like, even when people come, like, even Jeff's played elves all his life, and he's, oh, I play elves, and then, but when you start playing Judgment, you find yourself just playing things that are cool and things you like and models you like and that kind of thing. So cool. All right, that's excellent, George. Thanks for going through that list. Before we segue into the next section, I wanted to mention there's another podcast called Judgment Day Gaming.
It's a bunch of guys.
Yeah, from North America. They're, believe it or not, they're brand new to podcasting. They've never done it before, and they're really good. I'm not just saying it; they're an excellent podcast. There's a link on the website, actually, under podcasts. I've got a link directly to their audio boom, so you can get that, download that on iTunes and stuff like that. So have a listen. They're really good. I've got episode 4 of theirs racked up for the morning when I ride to work. I listen to it on my bike, so that's going to be cool. Yeah, so have a look at that. It's really cool. Also...
Yeah, it was a great episode. I just listened to it.
Oh, you did?
Earlier today. It was really great fun. I actually made them a promise that if I qualify for the playoffs, then I will play a warband in their honor that came to me whilst I was listening to episode 3.
Episode 3, yeah. Cool, okay. We'll see. And they've got a meta of, they rate to the other day, they've got 10 guys fully in, like all in. So they've got, I think, up to 100 judgment models between the group. They've got all the models doubled over. Like they've got at least two of everything in the
yeah. Manner. They went balls deep.
Yeah, it's so good
as a meta, which is super exciting.
Yeah, it's really good.
They're gonna crank out the amount of games those guys are gonna crank out in the next in the next month, especially once that new fire and earth map hits.
I know.
It's crazy.
They're in the northeast of the states. I think they're in the New York State. I think. Oh, it's up there somewhere, so that's where they are, which is kind of cool because we've got a pretty good little meta in Chicago as well. So yeah, it's North America's going pretty solid. We've got to get Europe cranking, but at the moment it's going pretty good, so that's good. All right, now George and I are going to go through the offensive artifacts, and we're going to play a game where we have to talk about the artifact and then pick a hero we would give it to. And as we work through the list, we can't use the same hero twice. So if a hero gets nominated, if a hero gets nominated for an item, they can't get another one down the list. We'll go through all the offense. If we have time, we'll do defense. Otherwise, we'll do it next show. So, all right, George, I'm going to go alphabetical order. I've got them in front of me. The first offensive artifact is Armor Shredder. For those who don't know, this just reduces the opponent's resilience by one. Resilience is like armor in the game. So it reduced by one. So, okay, George, talk about it. Who uses it and who's your pick?
Armor Shredder. So I've had a couple of very notable play experiences with this item. Yep. One was when I put it on Kogan when I played against you, and I used it to just Marcus. Gobble your Marcus up because he had all of a sudden he was like red zero, and I just went pew pew pew. That was just absolutely brutal.
If you
find yourself on a board state having brought Kogan, which apparently not a lot of people do, and your opponent has one or two heroes that have res 2, it would be Kogan.
Okay, you're picking Kogan. Yep.
Yeah. However, what I actually think it might be best on is Itchy, aka Jaeger.
Jaeger, yep.
For soul stripping,
especially off the tanks.
Yeah, off the tanks and off the res 1 support heroes.
All right. Armor Shredder is an item I use a fair bit, actually. It's one of the ones I do buy a lot. And more recently, the hero that I'm finding getting huge value out of it is actually Lord Faziel. So Faziel, for people that know, he's an undead knight. He's got double J, with a double J comment whenever he does double damage.
D-chap.
But you take off the armor first.
So before you do the multiplication step.
So for him, it's like a 2 damage difference if you take it on him. And particularly if I'm playing, I mean, it depends who I'm playing against. But the other day I had a game against a lot of orcs, you know, like Haxar, Dhonraka was in it. So I got it on him, and he got double J against Dhonraka. Dhonraka was stone form, but it went down to 2. So I'm actually doing 8 damage to him when I'm charging with a double J on a stone form Dhonraka when I've got that item. So it's actually quite cool. I quite like it on him. The other one where if you want to go, the other thing that's not bad too, my secondary one is Skull. Skull often rolls 1 dice against a lot of people. So people often buy him the Vorpal Blade, but often it still results in only having 1 dice. But with the Shredder, if you're playing against guys with armor, he just has 1 dice continually do pretty good damage.
Especially those res 1 supports.
That's it, yeah. I mean, he's...
They go from being, you know, pretty immune to most of his damage to all of a sudden being in danger of just getting 1 round in.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the... That's a 2. I mean, a special mention of Kogan and Astario, who already have 1 built in. They just, if you think Trommel without armor is a dead set, he's a dead man walking.
He's done. He could be hiding behind a wall in melee several people, and you still just shoot him to death. You're like, dude, I can see you. Just keep you.
All right, cool. Let's armor Shredder. That's a good one. Next one, George. Boots of
I would put the Armor Shredder in the top 5 of Warband specific most effective items.
Yeah, I agree.
As in you choose this item in your deployment phase, and your opponent puts down like one or two defenders, and you're just like,
And that double defender meta is pretty solid. The double defender build, you see a few of them around. I'd almost certainly pick this every time. If you're playing a big dwarf, a dwarf heavy one, dwarves tend to have res 1. Like I said, Haxar, a lot of the supports do as well. So if you're playing a lot of res 1 people, it's annoying as hell.
Especially on the ranged heroes. It ups their damage curve significantly, because they have a high chance of getting 3 attacks in, which means that the Armor Shredder is buying you 3 extra damage.
That's correct. Yes, it is.
Which is a really good return on investment.
Yeah, it is. Alright, cool. Second one is the Boots of Elvenkind. This gives the bearer Pathfinder. George, what do you think?
Well, I've been thinking about this, and my first question was, does anyone need the Boots of Elvenkind? Because, you know, you can just take Gendris, or can't you just maneuver yourself in such a way that you can take the 1 inch into account? And then I realized that Thrommel exists. And if there is anything that ruins Thrommel's day, it's having a wall just placed in front of him.
Yeah.
Or getting stuck behind a wall, trying to clamber up.
I think the walls is the main thing. I think most of the time you can cop the -1 movement penalty that you get through a forest. But the thing that you can't cop is walls. So if you're playing a Marcus or on a wall, you know, heavy map, they can be good. They're very situational. You don't see them a lot. I don't take them a lot, but I have taken them in the past, and it's mainly if you need to get over those walls. Like, there's a lot of heroes, like Zhonya gets it at level 2 for free. Gendris can give it out, so there's other ways you can get it. And I think one of the things we didn't want to have is that not having Pathfinder is a massive disadvantage. There are some instances before I've played games where it's been a huge disadvantage for the races that don't have it, and a big advantage for the ones that do. So it's kind of readily available, and it's not devastating if you don't, but if you're playing a Marcus that has a lot of fate and can put down walls everywhere, it can really screw you up. So that's where the Elvenkind boots come in play.
Yeah, so if I were to use these are on my almost never buy section of the board, but if I were to buy them, I'd buy them for Thrommel, because not only that, but also treacherous ground.
Yeah,
treacherous ground just kills.
Yeah,
just completely kills him.
Yeah, I agree. Cool. I'll have to pick a hero, I guess. Yeah, I was actually thinking of Brock or Thorgar, the ones that the melee aggressors that can get caught out without it. So yeah, that's it for that.
You did that on stream. You did that on stream when you played on the swamp map.
I have, yeah.
On
Yeah.
swamp map, there was, you know, it was a good choice for Brock.
Yeah, done it before.
Sure.
All right, cool. Another pair of boots. Boots of speed, plus one
Boots of
movement.
speed. Yeah. So who do you give this one to? My pick has got to be Svetlana.
Ah, yep, cool. Yep.
Couple of reasons. A, she has a Pathfinder built in, so she gets a doubly benefit from the boots of speed. She doesn't just lose the benefit from the boots of speed when she goes to difficult terrain, she keeps it.
Yep.
Second of all, she's a soul gazer, which means that she wants to be able to walk and soul gaze. This gives her an 8-inch threat on that, and potentially it also gives her a 12-inch threat on a double walk and astral guidance. Soul gaze,
So guys,
which is the real like clutch move, right? Because if you're three souls, and you know, you have next activation, and you can just dash across to the other side of the table to go for a, you know, for a 7+ or a 6+, depending on, you know, allies and stuff, that can, you know, win you the game. That's a very powerful thing to have in the back pocket. So
Yeah, I agree.
she spends a lot of time moving, I find.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's reasonable. I think all the dwarves obviously are good candidates for this particular one. But even then, there's the Lori Bella can give dwarves plus one movement at level two. Bynaskis comes with an extra move because he's on a tank. But yeah, I think it's a good one. I think this is kind of if you're playing on a swamp like Nightflyer said, swamp maps big one for the Boots of Elvenkind, which is true. But if you're not playing against walls, Boots of Speed is kind of better because you negate the plus one, the minus one negate of forest anyway. Yet if you're not in a forest, you get plus one speed. So unless you need to get over walls, the Boots of Speed is pretty much better than the Boots of Elvenkind. So that's another thing there. And Jeffrey said Rakir. Yeah, I had Rakir in my thoughts as well because of his 1-inch reach is a big negative for him. So making him speed five gives him the same reach as the other aggressors like Zhonya and Brock. So yeah, that's pretty good as well.
That's true, but a well-placed set of shadow orbs would give you
Yeah,
such
that would do
coverage
it.
of the board that you can mitigate that.
Yeah, I agree. We've got a couple of good ones coming up here, George. So we've got. So you said Thrommel, didn't you? Yeah, and I'd probably agree. I think. Oh no, did you
Oh,
get Thrommel?
I said Thrommel for
Oh,
Boots of
Svetlana.
Elvenkind, the
That's right.
Pathfinder, and Svetlana for Boots of Speed.
That's right. Yeah. That makes sense. Yeah, for me, I don't know. I haven't really bought this one a lot either. I think I have bought it for Thrommel before. It is nice to get that extra speed on him. But I think any of the dwarves, it kind of makes sense. And never catch people out. Yeah, I think I have done it with Marcus as well before because I'm big on Marcus's shield bash. But yeah, there's another thing. All right, cool. Next one is Heart Seeker, plus one RNG.
Yes, so this one I think has to be for my man Kogan. I think he feels the difference that the Heartseeker makes more than the other heroes. I think he needs it more than the other heroes. I found if he has the Heartseeker and he's aiming, he can shoot reasonably well into combat. And there's a significant chance that he's going to have to shoot into combat because he has a 4-inch gun. So having your opponent out in the open and 4-inch away from Kogan is really hard to do. And I think it's almost necessary that if he uses his gun, which shouldn't necessarily be every turn, but either he should be using a double move shoot, right, where he's just gaining board position and popping off a quick shot, or he is standing still aiming and unloading three shots at someone's face after having remembered to pop his fate ability.
Yes, of course. War cry.
Because
Battle cry.
I never remember to pop his fate ability until after I've already rolled the first
First
attack.
one, that
Because I'm
shits
like, exactly. I just go, oh yeah, I'm aiming, start rolling dice, and I'm like, ah, crap, I should. especially when that first roll has like so mediocre dice, and I'm just like, oh, this is gonna bite me in the butt.
I agree.
I think he needs it most.
The other thing about Kogan, man, he's one of the few models that gets benefit out of that in when it's not his activation, because he can stand and shoot. So
stand and shoot. Yeah.
He's actually gets good value out of it. If you're going to use him as a ranged guy and you're confident you can do that, not get him stuck in combat, which happens a lot, he's a great candidate for it. I agree as well. The other ones I think I put in the same category. I put Bynascus and Laurie Biller in the same category. They got 6-inch guns, but they both got very powerful guns. Laurie can trigger the extra attack, and Bynascus, if there's two people side by side, this negates the minus one that he gets. So I think if you're confident you can play those ones, or Kogan, all three of them are the same for me. If they're going to be shooting a lot more than they do combat, and you're confident they're not going to get stuck in a big melee, they're brilliant for this item. I think if I had to pick one person right now, I'd pick Laurie.
Laurie Bella, I think, would have to be my pick out of those two, because she can disengage herself with the Dwarven Ale.
Yeah, that's right. It's still shoot. Yeah.
If you jam me up, I throw a Dwarven Ale at my feet, push you out of the way, and then I pop two shots off at you. So even in a situation where she's getting dived on, she can get herself out of it and get use out of the Heartseeker.
Yeah. And I think we haven't mentioned, I think it's Overkill and Alan Deer. The other one is maybe Zaffin. The problem with Zaffin, if you put this on Zaffin, he's a target anyway, but if you put this on him, he's going to get doved. And once he gets doved, it's pain. Yeah. So you need the thing about Zaffin, he's having a rough time at the moment a little bit, but a lot of people playing 3v3s, I think he really comes to his own in the 5s, where you can have him really far back and still have that 10-inch range come into it. But he's another candidate that you could do. But like I said, it makes him a massive target to get doved if he's going to be doing this.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely.
Cool. Yeah. All right. I love this one. The Hunter's Knife, George. So +2 damage versus monsters from basic attacks. So fire away.
So the Hunter's Knife. This is a tricky one. It depends on the map, but I think the person who gets the most use out of the Hunter's Knife is Nephemy.
Okay.
Because what it is preferably you would want this on a map where your deployment zone is touching your shrine. So preferably a 3v3 map.
Yep.
Where you have a shrine, your effigy touching your deployment zone. You then have two options. Either you're close enough to have her base to base by the item and then do a charge in straight into the monster, or even better, you get your weakest hero, your Soul Gazer or something, buy an item and pass it to her for two actions, and then walking to a distance where he can provide a dice, right? So a Bastion, for instance, or one of the 3-inch sticky people with long sticks, and then she uses it, gets the charge, gets loads of dice, cranks out a whole bunch of damage, and then immediately trades it up.
I was going to say that. So for me, it's whatever hero you want to level up first turn, if you can get this in their hands and they can immediately trade it, it's an amazing item to do that. So like one of the ones, like two of the guys, Jeff and Commander Nightfly, have both said Piper is a good one, because particularly if you've got Backstab as well, he's going to destroy whatever beast it is and you just trade it straight away. So since the trading rules have come in, I think this item's become massive. George brought up a really good tactic for new people that you might not think of. You can pass items on, so you can daisy chain your heroes during your deployment zone. One hero buys it, passes it straight away for one action, then moves up. And that means the main hero is fully operational with the item without spending an action to get it. So really cool. And with the new rules, as soon as you kill the monster, you can get the fate back you bought it with and buy something else, trade it. It's I reckon once we get maturity in the meta, that's going to be an open you're going to see almost every time. If there's a monster to kill, you'll find that you'll be able to to do that and then trade it. So it's a great little item. +2 damage is massive in the game if you're not familiar with it. So you're pretty much going to kill anything you're going to hit with that if you've got +2 damage.
Also, fun fact, if you give it to one of the guys that has a 6 damage crit, you can one-shot monsters with
You
it.
can, yeah. Torgar can do it. Yeah, 8 damage.
Oh
Yeah,
god.
yeah, yeah.
You know, he can just he can I mean that
He can one
just
shot Gloom. Yeah.
exactly. He could one-shot a gloom, but not only that, but he could potentially one-shot the gloom on the other side of the board.
Yeah.
If my first activation is to buy the item, give it to Thorgar, and walk one of my guys up, and then you go in and try and set up your gloom kill, I can walk and charge and kill it on the
Kill
charge in one
it.
go and just
Yeah.
steal it from
Steal it, yes.
and then
Cool.
trade it for a defensive item.
Yeah, that's right. To protect you for the next round.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Potion of Ogre Strength. This is bearer gains +1 damage versus heroes and summon models for the current activation, one use only. So this is the first one use only item we've seen, but it can be pretty big, this one. Particularly on, well, okay, I'll go first for my pick for this one. It is, so I've used it on Piper before. With him having backstab and this, it's unbelievable. I did it in the Vassal League game fairly recently. But if you look at a what do you call it, a Skull or a Nephany with this is unbelievable. So yeah, she'd be my pick. I'd probably be pick her Skull, but I'll probably pick Nephany.
I would agree with you on the Nephany pick simply because she rolls more dice and has a higher chance of actually doing a point of damage during her 6 attacks that she has, right? So because you need to, in order for this item to trigger, you need to roll at least one hit,
That's
right?
right. Yeah.
So Skull sometimes has situations where he's rolling one dice and then there's a 50-50 chance of just rolling nothing, which means the item will only trigger half as many times as
Yes.
against
Yeah.
when you use it with Nephany.
Yeah.
So Nephany would get it there. However, because of the rules of the game, I've already given Nephany one item, but technically
Yes.
I would give her the Hunter's Knife and that she can go and then get the kill and then trade the Hunter's Knife for this.
Right. Yeah.
So that she's then level 2 from getting the monster kill, and she has the potion of ogre strength to get the turn 2 kill
I mean,
for on an enemy hero.
we don't see this item enough. This item is devastating, I think, in the right hands. So hopefully we'll get to see it a bit more. But yeah, it summons models as well, so destroys Algorath like there's no tomorrow. If you need to do that. But yeah, it's cool. All right. So you've done. Okay, so you've done, yeah, that's, you can get away with that. You've done Nephany for the Hunter's Knife, but then you're going to trade it in for this. That's reasonable.
Yeah, although I've used it on Skull before, and for Skull, it's nice to buy immediately. So to buy it in your first turn,
Yep.
and then to just carry it for a long period of the game, and then use it some
Unleash
point
it.
in turn 3 or 4,
Some unsuspecting fool
when
who's knocked down at your feet.
exactly. Yeah, you have to wait for Skull to get engaged and to start his activation in melee range with an enemy hero with some kind of favorable assists, maybe. Maybe he's rolling 2 dice, maybe 3 dice if he's lucky, and then you crack this item out, and all of a sudden it's just a
Boom.
huge burst of damage
It's
out of
boom.
nowhere.
Yeah, I like it. All right, sensational. Ring of Power, +1 Madge.
Yeah, so I think I have to go for the obvious one, which is Istariel.
Yep.
Because she needs that extra dice desperately, because she's so reliant on getting the 2S
Yep.
fire. It's what she does. It's why you bring her. It's to liberally apply 2S fire at decent range against hard to hit targets. You know, when it's important, i.e., you're going to be shooting into melee. You're going to be shooting people that are hiding behind shrines.
Yeah.
You're going to be shooting people that are on the flanks that have high agility, that kind of stuff, like the important shots, right?
And she's
So she
also,
needs.
yeah, I mean, she's a good anti-tech against Minotaur tech. So getting 5 dice against all the Minotaurs, because they're all Agi-3, is quite nice. She ignores the one res that Gendry's has got. She ignores the one res that Domrak's got. So if I'm playing, like you said, if I'm playing Istariel, she's almost certainly going to get this item. The other one, though, that I've bought it more for, and I'll pick this one, is Kvatho.
I was about to say Cavado as well. That was my honourable mention.
Yeah, I love Cavado. People know I use him a lot. Most of my games, most of my warbands, he's in my warband. If I was playing for the World Championship tomorrow, he'd be in my seven. And I've bought it for him a lot. He is remarkably good with this item. He can do the 2S fire as well. He doesn't have the fate ability that she has. But he's really good. So anyway, that's the one I think I'd pick it. I think I've picked it more for him than I have for Astarial. So
There's a lot of warband compositions that your opponent can bring where Astarial doesn't actually need it.
Yeah.
You know, if your opponent is bringing a Minotaur warband, a dwarf warband, you're better off getting her the armor shredder because you're going to be facing some defenders, and you know the Agi-3 is not going to stop you from getting your fire off. You'll be fine.
Yeah, that's true. Or if you've got a strong debuff tech, either knockdown with the Marcus, or you've got a Retarius from Jaeger, or some sort of debuff tech, you can. She's fine as well. Okay, cool. Next one, Tome of Experience.
Yeah, so
there's one big obvious one that everyone uses it for, but I think you've already said it.
I'm not going to actually say that one. Yeah, I'm actually not going to do that one.
Yeah.
My claim is that a better target for the Tome of Experience is Thorgar. Because Thorgar has two things that he gets from going to level 3 super quickly. First of all, he can get the Tome of Experience in the first turn and use it at the beginning of still turn and then still charge and use his benefits immediately or enrage snow. The benefit that you get from spending the two fate is that you get the hit points and a Thorgar the level 3 hit points, extra hit points that you get from Thorgar make a world of difference.
Yeah, I think it's 3 more, isn't it? I think
it's a world of difference, and the amount of fate that you save in not having to pay fate for your enraged slams from that point on will have paid for itself by turn 4 now you can just do an enraged slam and a man catcher every turn.
He's almost the most fate efficient hero in the game anyway. But he becomes, obviously, he has no more abilities that cost fate after that. He becomes a monster. I agree. I didn't think about this one, but I think you've nailed it on the head. I think he's the best choice. I think he's a good choice. I haven't used this item much at all. I've seen people try to use it in the Thrommel tech. That's the one that I was referring to at the start. Getting him level 3 is really good, but it's fairly slow for him to do this. It does slow you down to try to get him to do it. I think the other one that's a good opportunity to get it, because I think of heroes, think about Thorgar, he can get level 3 anyway a lot of the time, but someone like a Styx, where it's hard to get level 3, and his level 3 is so strong, where he can do up to 10 direct damage, I think he's a good candidate for it as well. If I was going to pick someone now that I'm not going to pick Thorgar, I didn't think about it, I'd pick Styx as my choice for this item.
That's also a good one, yeah. That's assuming that you're going for you've decided at some point during your deployment or the beginning of your first turn that you're going to get Styx leveled. In which case, I mean, that's a super, super solid play. I mean, he does have one of the best level 3s abilities out there, for sure.
I mean, he's level 2. With one symbol, you can move someone 3 inches, even from ranged.
It's so broken. Everyone that I do it to, like, always ask me, like, wait a second, are you sure it's 3 inches? Yes. 1S? Yeah.
He's a funny one, Sticks, because he's ultra, he's very popular, and everyone likes him, but he dies so easily. But, and mostly, but when you're using his abilities, it normally means he's going to die. Like, if you switch with someone, or if you're power shifting someone from melee, that means he's in melee, like, so. But anyway, I think he'd be my choice. He's brilliant. Sticks, so yeah, he'd be the one I'd choose for that one.
That's a good call.
All right, so that's the last one we've got is probably the most used item in the game. There's a factory somewhere on Athean that churns these out, and it's called the guy who patented this item is rich. It's called the Vorpal Blade, and it's +1 mel. And I'm pretty sure I would challenge you to find a game where this item is not purchased by one of the players.
Yeah, it's the number one hottest item.
It is hot.
Sure.
All right, George, there's a lot of candidates here. So who are you picking for your Vorpal Blade?
So everybody wants the Vorpal Blade.
Yeah.
Everyone, right? Like, there is no one who is like, eh, Vorpal Blade, whatever, I'll leave it, you know, I can take it and leave it, it's no big deal. It makes everybody's life much easier. So whether or not you have a good damage grid and you want the Vorpal Blade because you want big crits, you know, like Sonya, Thorgar, stuff like that, or you have really cool combat maneuvers, yeah, like, you know, Barnascus, for instance, is a surprisingly good one for this. Any of the ones that have the knockdown, you know, Marcus really enjoys a timely Vorpal Blade sometimes for his shield slams. Everyone really likes it, but I think there's only one person who needs it. But I would also like to add one honorable mention for a hero who I think also wants it desperately and can skyrocket with it. So the one that needs it is Brock.
Yeah. Yep.
Just because he lives and dies by on that one die on crits.
Yeah.
So, you know, until there's an item that gives you +2 attack dice against monsters on the charge, he's going to be buying this one.
Yeah.
However, as an honorable mention, I would like to include Sky.
Ooh, nice one.
Because I think Sky gets a lot of value out of having the extra dice from the Vorpal Blade, especially if you also give him a Leech Blade, which is a defensive item.
Yeah, that combination is nice. Yeah.
Then he just, I mean, he will, I don't know, it's like a weird thing. He basically becomes this stick wielding sensei who who just bashes people's brains in and takes their health, you know, with his amazing stick talents. And I think it's really, really powerful.
Nice honorable mention there, George. So for me, I've got a couple. The one that I would pick it for, and I've talked about this a lot, I've picked on Dondarrakha a lot. The one that Nightfly actually mentioned, and I've probably done it more. And if I had to pick one person, I'm a Rakir person more than a Brock person, I'd pick it on Rakir. I've tooled up Rakir a lot. If you give Rakir this +1 agi, he becomes an absolute monster in the game. He can move around everywhere. He's poisoning people out of front and center. He becomes agi 6 versus RNGs because of his Cloak of Darkness. And agi
which
5
is brutal.
He's my pick is actually Rakir. And my honorable mention is a Dondarrakha.
Okay. So well, I mean, that's actually a really solid choice. To be fair, if there's any one hero that appreciates the double item buy,
I think it's
Rakir with, like you said, with the Vorpal Blade and the Boots of Agility.
He's a beast. He's a beast.
Although Marcus appreciates that item combo tremendously as well.
He's another one. You talk about, you know, when you play League of Legends or, you know, Dota 2 or whatever, and you get these fed characters, like a Marcus with a Vorpal and Agi boots, man, that dude, he's annoying.
That's bad. That's super, super bad. Because the only thing that ever trips Marcus up is not nailing the shield slam.
I know.
And
an extra dice makes a massive
difference.
Putting
attacks into Marcus is kind of already feels like a waste because of the rest too. But with Agi 5, you won't even bother. Like you will actively vacate any like the area surrounding him.
Yeah, he's a beast. I think.
And because he's leveled up, right? Because he got the monster kill and went shopping for it, he also has the movement debuff.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, that's right.
So you can't even get away from him.
It's the thing about
savage.
With the Agi item, people are tempted to put it on a low Agi hero, but I find the Agi 4 heroes get the most benefit. And the reason why, because the way the dice work in Judgment, right? So if you've got an Alandir, you've got an Astarion, all these guys, the Cavados, they're RNG or Mag 7. So if you go to Agi 5, they all of a sudden cannot crit you unless they buy the item. So this is where you get a massive difference, because not only is it just one less dice, they actually cannot even fluke a crit against you, which is huge. So I think that's where if you make it like an Agi 3 dwarf or a Minotaur go to 4, it's good, but they can still crit you. All those guys can still crit you because they're all Mag 7, right? And I think that's the big difference. I think when you do an Agi 4 guy, and I'm preaching to the converted here, but and even the Mel guys, I mean, Thorgar's Mel 7, Brock's Mel 7, Rakir, they're all base Mel 7. So unless they're buying an item or they can buff it somehow, none of those guys can crit you anymore. It's huge. It's most of the aggressors get an extra damage when they crit, they go from 3 to 5. So if they can't crit you, then so this is where the Agi item I think is the best on an Agi 4 hero base. It's amazing.
And especially Rakir is the one that you want to protect, because
He's
he's
your
your
man.
big damage dealer, right? He's your garden hose that you're just bringing out onto the table. So you want to make sure that he's safe, because he's going to be taking the long distance, walk charge,
That's right. All right, cool. Let's say we've gone over an hour, George. That was quite cool. We've gone through all the offensive items. So
Offensive ones, yeah.
next week we're definitely going through the defensive ones. Next week we'll have probably we'll know who's in the playoffs and who's not. I'm trying to wrap up the tournament, the league rounds this week. We'll have the neoprene mat up for pre-sale next week. We should have the sculpt for Fazil finished next week. So we've got a bunch of stuff going on, and the
Very exciting.
Dorga Khan rules. So what we're doing for the Vassal League, because we're going to 5v5 and we're using all the maps, we're going to release Dorga Khan's rules. For the so he'll come out. So hopefully George next week will be able to talk about it. We'll see how we go.
Fantastic.
The illustrations are getting started by Helgi. Helgi's a guy that did, well, he did Nephany, Lauribella, he did Ashtooth, done a whole bunch. So he's doing Dorga Khan for us, which is great. So that's big show next week, George, and we'll do the defensive items as well.
Fantastic.
All
Looking
right.
forward to it.
All right. So thanks everybody for listening. Episode 10. It's been great. It's great to have George on again. I will have to round in Colin at some stage, either do a three-way or I'll have a chat to Colin about some of the origin material. So him and I have been writing a whole bunch of new material for a lot of the new heroes that we've got in the pipeline and
Well, not only
extending.
that, but I'm hoping to hear some cool Antarctic explorer stories.
Oh yes, you went to Antarctica, yes, of course.
Yeah.
So I might just try to instead of I'll keep George on the Monday nights, whatever time it is, if wherever you are around this time, and I might slot in a Colin here and there when I get the chance. But we definitely want to do
Slide in the
another.
cheeky Colin.
That's right. We want to do a origin stuff because we're both expanding the storyline and got lots to talk about, a lot of cool stuff. So we'll do that as well at some
Brilliant.
stage. Yeah, cool. All right, George, all the best with your two games, mate. I really hope you make the playoffs. The competition's better for it, having you part of it. I hope you kick Jeff's ass. You're playing tomorrow, aren't you? I think, against Jeff. Is that right?
Yeah, so it's tomorrow morning for you guys over there in
Okay.
Australia,
Yeah.
and it's tonight, late at night for
So
me over
it's
here
about
in Europe.
11 hours away, I think, or 10 hours is when I think. It's around that time. So
It's
hopefully you'll.
it's going to be about 10 hours from now.
Yeah, cool. Just a quick shout out to Garlic Roast for following us on Twitch during the stream. Thank you for that.
Thank
And
you.
everybody, we'll chat to you next week and hopefully we'll be able to cue some music soon, George. I'll get on to Jeff about it so we can cue some music on the way out on our outtakes. All right.
All
All right.
right,
Cheers,
guys.
everybody. See you later. Have a good
Cheers.
night.